Wisconsin is a powerhouse when it comes to the cranberry industry in the U.S. Our bogs produce around 60% of all of the tart red fruit in America. Last year, all of the natural forces aligned to produce a very good crop, with some guessing that it would rival the state's record for cranberry production. Today, we'll talk about our status in the world market and how recent bountiful harvests are impacting prices for growers in our region. That's this hour on the West Side. I'm Rich Kramer, and I'm joined by two cranberry experts from Western and West Central Wisconsin. Joining me in the studio is Jim Reed. He is the CEO of the Cran Grow Cooperative based in Warrens. Jim Reed, welcome to the West Side.
Glad to be here. Thank you, Richard.
Glad to have you. Next, we've got joining us by phone, Tom Lochner. He's a longtime cranberry spokesperson for he's the executive director for the Wisconsin Cranberry Growers Association, based in Wisconsin Rapids, and a go-to for anyone looking to learn about the industry in Wisconsin. Tom Lochner, thank you for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having us, Rich. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Listeners, we'd like to hear from you as well. We'd like you to be in on this conversation. Dial in at 1-800-228-5615. If you're a cranberry grower and you want to chime in, we'd love to hear from you. 800-228-5615 if you're just a cranberry lover. We'd like to hear as well. Recipes, whatever you want. We're going to be talking mostly economics and harvest for the beginning of the hour, and then we'll get into the Wisconsin's place in the world when it comes to the cranberry market. But, again, 800-228-5615. You can also comment on the West Side Facebook page if you're feeling too bashful to go on air. So, with that, let me just start, and I'll go to you, Tom Lochner. How did cranberry growers fare in 2016? I saw a quote from you in an article last fall, or around August, saying that, or around October, saying that it could rival previous records. But I think the USDA estimated we were going to be around 5 million barrels. Did we surpass that?
The numbers that I saw recently, and these are based on numbers that come from our federal marketing order, which tracks cranberry production, and all growers report their production as well as the people that are buying cranberries, which in the industry are referred to as handlers. Their numbers show that Wisconsin's crop came in a little bit under 6 million barrels. They're thinking anywhere from, 5.85 to 5.9 million barrels. A barrel's 100 pounds of fruit. So
right.
It's not quite a record crop for Wisconsin here, but it is obviously probably the second largest crop we've had. And I think a little bit what held us back is we did see some crop loss due to fruit rot in the field because we did have such a warm and wet growing season, especially in the fall. We saw a little bit more a little bit of an impact to the quality of the fruit that was coming off, so we lost some crop that way. But I think overall, a crop that size is the second largest that we've had here in Wisconsin, and is a pretty good indicator of our growers' ability to grow cranberries.
Jim Reed, I actually saw an article from last year where a grower in Massachusetts was quoted, and I thought it was just kind of, it made me chuckle, but they were being dead serious when they said they said it would be nice if Wisconsin had an average growing year.
That's a great quote. Then there is no such thing as an average growing year unless you look across many, many years. This year was a very good growing year. We had plenty of water, but to be honest, and what Tom had said, we had a little bit more water than we would have liked. Mm. Our growers had a great harvest this year. Let's not make a mistake about that. There was a wonderful harvest in Wisconsin and a wonderful harvest for the Cranberry Growers Cooperative, but there was some rot. So the yields were down just a little bit from where they otherwise would have been with the good growing season that we'd had.
And the Tom Lochner, we're talking about a record. When was that set? Was that 2013?
Yeah, 2013. We were a little bit over 6 million barrels of fruit, so that would have been the record crop.
Wow, That's insane.
And I was just going to note, and one of the things is that we haven't, the crop's been growing, but it's not because we're harvesting a large. There hasn't been a large increase in acreage over the last 3 to 4 years. I think it's just primarily due to increased productivity per acre, and I think that's important for people to know. We're harvesting about 21,000 acres of cranberries here in Wisconsin, and we've been at that number between 20 and 21,000 probably for the last 3 to 5 years. And any increases in the crop are due to productivity, and of course a lot of that's due to weather, but we're also seeing growers adopt new technologies. We're seeing a lot of new varieties come in. And growers are just doing a much better job of growing the crops so that the per acre yield is a lot is increasing over time.
So when I think of productivity, Jim Reed, I think of what Tom Lochner just mentioned, new varieties that can produce more. What other things go into that increased productivity?
Again, growers are getting constantly better. You know, growers are farmers, basically, and a farmer spends his life looking to see how do they improve on what they do. And they've gotten just better and better. They learn from each other. Being a cooperative, they communicate with each other. They share whatever good ideas there are. So our growers just continuously improve with what they've done. And to Tom's point, they have been evolving out some of the older varieties that didn't yield quite as well to some newer varieties, very slowly, though, that you do yield better than the older ones. So they've made sure that they've kept their yields up and improved.
And very, very slowly is right. Tom, is it true that these vines can last as long as 60 years?
Yeah, actually, a well-maintained cranberry bed will produce definitely. The last survey we did, which was a couple of years ago, I think the average planting was about 28 years old. So they do produce for a long, long time once they're planted. And taking a bed out of production and renovating it and replacing with a new variety is an economic decision a grower has to make. And you know, you're taking something out of production today, and you're not going to see a crop for 2 to 3 years or full production for 4 or 5, and that's about a $20,000 to $30,000 an acre investment that you're making and foregoing that income. So, as was said earlier, it's something that's done slowly over time, but we've seen growers. We went through a period where we took out a lot of the old native varieties and put in Stevens variety, which is just across the two natives, and that was a much more productive variety. And because we've had variety improvement programs both at UW-Madison, Rutgers, as well as we have a private grower that is also developing their own new varieties, as those have come on, become available, growers are taking a look at replacing Stevens and other varieties with the newer ones, too. So it's a long-term process when you're in cranberries. You're not, you know, it's not an annual plant that you plant. You can change out like corn or soybeans, but it's a perennial plant, so it's something that you have to make long-term decisions on. And I think that's one of the things that sets the industry apart a little bit is that growers have to think long-term. They have to think forward, make decisions based upon the impacts it's going to have not only today, but 4 or 5 or 10 years down the road.
Jim Reed.
Yeah, and that's an interesting point, and you've got to recognize that cranberry growers are different than traditional farmers in that if you're growing corn or beans and don't make a lot of money, you can switch to potatoes, to green beans, to something else. Once you've set up a cranberry marsh, that's what it is you have. Many of our growers have been in the cranberry business for multiple generations, some for 6 and 7 generations. The average grower in the co-op has been in the business for almost 50 years. Hmm. And we've had marshes that have been in production continuously since the 1880s. Now, not necessarily the same vines because they have evolved out into new varieties, but these people have been at this for a long time, and it's passed down from generation to generation.
1-800-228-5615 is the number to call. If you've got a question or a comment about cranberries in Wisconsin, we're talking about a heck of a good year for growing last year. It crept up to Wisconsin's record set in 2013. That record was 600 million pounds of cranberries, which is hard to believe. 800-228-5615. Just some real quick logistical things. At the Crangwell Cooperative, you've got a brand new processing facility, excuse me, that opened last year.
Yes.
Grand opening last year. So I imagine you're busy right now with fruit from last year's crop. Or what happens? I mean, once you get 600 million pounds of cranberries, mm-hmm. where does it go? I mean, how quickly does it make it into the market?
Well, if you'd come by, we'd show you. We've got an avalanche of cranberries waiting in our freezer from the harvest. And we have a few left over from the 2015 crop. Because the plant was finished last year, we actually saved some of the 2015 harvest to process ourselves. Mm-hmm. So we're finishing that up now. We'll be starting on the 16 crop very soon. But we've got the fruit right on site in the freezer adjacent to the plant, every bit of it.
So then you start on it over the winter months.
Yes.
And
we process 24/7 continuously throughout the year. Now, obviously, we shut down every so often to clean the plant from top to bottom. Mm-hmm. But we do run 24 hours a day on the equipment that we have.
Tom Lochner, I'm wondering, have there been any changes in what farmers are growing their berries for? Because I would imagine different varieties of vine make different berries that are better for, say, sweet and dried or for juice. Is that the case or not?
Well, I think there is certainly a degree of that. Right now, the handlers, buyers of fruit are looking for berries that have a shape and a size that's conducive to making sweet and dry cranberries. And so I think those are a lot of handlers are looking for that particular fruit. The other things that we're looking at long-term within the variety improvement programs and the genetic programs are taking a look at the different traits that we can trace back to specific genes in cranberries so that we can start selecting for things like juice yield or sugar content or shape or color. Of course, productivity is something that growers are always interested in. So there's a lot of different traits that growers will look at, and it kind of depends upon what their end market's going to be. The dried cranberry, there's some preference for certain fruits for that. Growers that are growing for the fresh fruit market want a berry that's going to have good keeping quality. So they're depending upon how you're going to market it, they will select varieties based upon their suitability for the market.
And we've got a question that just came in on Facebook, and this is something I was going to get to a little later, but Michael Dalby wants to know, what is there being the guests, I would assume, their stance on the reintroduction of elk in Wisconsin with this level of productivity? Is crop damage all that much of a problem? Tom Lochner, want to take a stab at that? I know you and I talked last year about the elk being reintroduced. Some farmers are worried about trampling, about destruction of their dikes.
Well, yeah, our stance on elk, I think, has been that with any wildlife species, that reintroduction is that the proponents of a reintroduction are taking a look at the direct impacts or unintended consequences of making such a decision. And there was a decision made to establish a herd of elk in Jackson County, and when we talked to the department and the proponents, we asked them to be aware that these animals are not going to stay in the Jackson County forest. They're going to roam, and they're going to turn up on farms, and there's a potential and the risk for damage not only to the crop but also to water control structures and things like that. Mm-hmm. So we were concerned about having the department address those risks up front. They probably weren't as responsive as we would have liked, but we've seen that they're much more responsive since the elk showed up or were reintroduced and obviously started showing up on cranberry farms. And so the department has had a very good program within Jackson County, within the release area, to provide growers with fencing and other abatement practices to keep the elk off of the property. But we still remain concerned that those animals are going to start to roam around outside of Jackson County. And really, that's the largest cranberry-growing region in the world. And we just believe that if we're going to release those animals, that the proponents of their release recognize all of the costs that are involved and work with landowners to make sure that they're not putting farmers, whether it's cranberry growers or dairy farmers or corn or soybean farmers, at risk to damage because of an 800-pound animal roaming around can cause quite a significant amount of damage in a short period of time.
And the fencing, I think it was it $250,000 up to the DNR would spend. Is that per fence or is that just for the whole state for all the growers?
Well, I think within the region, they have a defined region in Jackson County that is the range for the elk. And there's a number of growers in that range. And my understanding is the department spent about $200,000 to $225,000 on fencing on properties within that range.
Okay. 800-228-5615. We've got a caller in Eau Claire. I believe this is Don. Don, is this?
Yes.
Thanks for calling in, Don. What's on your mind?
I happen to be 94 years old now, but when I moved to Eau Claire, it was in 1953, and I wasn't married at the time. I had the radio on a lot, and the FM network wasn't really set up at that time. So my only public radio contact was WLBL Auburndale. And I remember in the evenings during the fall season, there used to always be weather forecasts for the cranberry bogs. And apparently they flood them when there's a danger of frost or something. And I was wondering if someone there could at least briefly walk me and any other ignoramus through the through the ropes what you do to protect your crop.
Awesome, great question, Don. Thanks for the story. Let's go to Jim Reed. What would you tell the ignoramuses out there?
Don, first of all, anyone that lives to be 94, congratulations on that.
Yeah, congratulations. That's right.
You know, the heart of cranberry growing is water. That obviously you need many different things. And Wisconsin is unique in having so many of those things in the same place. The triangle that's surrounded with 39 on the east, 94 on the west, and 90 on the south really is the heart of cranberry country all the way up past Madison. In that area, we've got a very high water table, so we're lucky to have access to water. And you couldn't grow cranberries literally without the water because there are several times of the year that we need water for the crop. Obviously, everybody sees the great pictures that Ocean Spray puts online with the harvest, so we need the water to harvest cranberries. Otherwise, it would be an awfully difficult, labor-intensive process. But we also use water several other times of the year. When we have a frost warning, you know, if you have frost warning down Florida with oranges, you put heaters out and you do lots of other things, and you rarely, really don't prevent most of the damage. If you get a hard frost, you lose most of the crop. Up here in Wisconsin, because we have access to all this water, when we expect the first hard freeze, we flood the marsh and it protects the berries. It keeps them under and controls the temperature down at ground level. And that's a big advantage. That's one of the reasons why Wisconsin's been so successful in growing cranberries. On top of that, we leave that water on the marsh throughout the winter and we dust it with sand in the middle of the winter so that when the water melts come spring, the sand goes down to the soil and just helps replenish the supply of sand at soil level. So putting the water on the berries to keep them from freezing helps, but then keeping it there throughout the year helps them again. So we take that back off as soon as the spring thaws and we let them grow as they always will.
This is definitely a question coming from a layman, but Tom Lochner, has it ever been the case where, you know, bogs are flooded, but then it's so cold, maybe 2013, 2014, that winter, where the ice forms on it and you freeze? Can you?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I think, you know, back to the caller's question, you know, we used to have the cranberry bog forecast. We still have them, actually. And one of the services that the Growers Association provides is we do retain a weather forecasting service that prepares not only the frost forecast, but also other data, weather information that growers need. And we have that available online and have a toll-free number they can call to get the latest updated forecast. And generally during the growing season, growers will, once there is a frost warning, and it can occur any night during the growing season. We've had frost on July 4th, actually, that is a frost watch night. But what the growers will do instead of flooding, actually turn their irrigation systems on.
Oh.
And as long as we keep a stream of water going across the vines, as ice forms, it releases heat, and that will protect the vines down probably to 12 to 15 degrees Fahrenheit. And so we can do that to protect them. We also will, as was mentioned, flood them in the wintertime to protect them. and we flood them for harvest. Growers will also use a spring flood to as a way to control insects. The first generation of some of the insect pests we have, if we time it right, we can put a flood on and take care of the pest population without causing damage to the vines. And one of the common misconceptions I think people have is that cranberries grow in water, and actually they don't. During the growing season, it's a dry culture. They like water. They're shallow rooting, so they don't go looking for it, so we have to irrigate them. And the water table is close to the root zone, but they don't like a saturated soil. Mm. So we do have cases where, actually in the wintertime, we do have 6 to 12 inches of ice on top of the vines to protect them. It's like an ice mulch, protects the vines over the winter. And also we can talk to growers who are in the middle of harvest, and we get a cold snap, and they'll look out in the morning, and there'll be ice out there where they want to go harvest, so it'll delay them for a couple of days. So weather is always tricky in agriculture, and fortunately we're able to utilize water as a resource to help us grow the crop.
800-228-5615 is the number to call. If you've got a question or a comment about Wisconsin cranberries, let us know. I also have just been alerted that we had a station identification play in the middle of the program. We're having a technical difficulty with a rogue piece of equipment, so bear with us. If you hear it, we'll be right back on. That doesn't mean that the show is over. So let's take our first break here on the west side. We're talking cranberries in Wisconsin with Jim Reed, CEO of Cran Grow Cooperative in Warrens, and Tom Lochner of the Wisconsin Cranberry Growers Association in Wisconsin Rapids. 800-228-5615.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from Axley Law Firm, helping their clients get back to business by handling all their legal needs for more than 130 years. Information is at axley.com. Support also comes from Mayo Clinic Health System, providing hospice care and support to terminally ill patients and their families, wherever they call home. Information and resources are available at mayoclinichealthsystem.org.
You're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for joining us this snowy Monday morning in January. We're talking about cranberries at the cranberry market and cranberry growers right here in western Wisconsin. Wisconsin dominates when it comes to cranberry production. Nearly 600 million pounds grown and harvested last year alone. That is a record set in, or that is close to a record that was set in 2013. I'm speaking with two experts in the cranberry field. Tom Lochner is the executive director for the Wisconsin Cranberry Growers Association. He is based in Wisconsin Rapids. And Jim Reed is with me in studio. He is the CEO of the Cran Grow Cooperative based in Warrens, Wisconsin. They just built, and opened a beautiful $20 million plant last year that is going to be soon processing cranberries around the clock. 1-800-228-5615 if you've got a question or a comment. So, Jim Reed, I want to go to you and ask, did we get too much of a good thing? I mean, a 2016, nearly a record year, a lot of production, but I've been hearing a lot of stories year after year about cranberry prices being down, being suppressed because there is a surplus. So, is that where we're at right now?
This was a good harvest year, not just for Wisconsin but for the world. I believe the highest yield that the world has ever had was 1.2 billion pounds of cranberries this year. The world crop was almost 1.4 billion pounds. So Wisconsin was near its record, but Canada was above its record, set a new record, and there were other parts of the country that had very good harvest. So, yeah, there are more cranberries than we would like, but we're selling cranberries places where they haven't been traditionally. So if we can grow this consumption of cranberries, because there are many, many people in the world that would love to consume cranberries, we can deal with this. Mm-hmm. You know, we sell cranberries right now into over 30 countries, and Wisconsin sells cranberries into over 75 different countries, cranberry and cranberry products. So we need to keep working to sell products as broadly as we can to deal with the fact that we had a good harvest, because the last thing you'd ever want to do is tell a farmer, don't do well.
Right.
They don't get that. They want to grow as good as they can grow, and it's up to us, the businesses that handle and sell these cranberries, to deal with what's coming our way.
Tom Lochner, there has been some concern about Canada and how they're influencing what is turning out to be a glut. Is that a case of finger pointing, or are we just are growers at a spot where they just have to figure out new ways to use their product?
Well, that's a good question, because I can remember a few years back people were pointing fingers at Wisconsin as being part of the problem, and before that they were pointing fingers elsewhere. And I think you're right, it's probably pointing fingers. And Jim made a good point that there's a discussion within the industry if we really have an oversupply, and there's a lot of fruit around, there's a lot of fruit in the freezers and in inventory. But the question is, do we have a supply problem or do we have a demand problem? And I think it's a little bit of both. In that what we need to do is we need to sell more fruit, and we need to find new markets and develop those markets. And there's a lot of groups like CranGrow and Ocean Spray, and then also our federal marketing order, that are looking at international markets as an opportunity to move more fruit. We see sales domestically remaining relatively flat or going up 2 to 3% a year. But then we also see that overseas we're growing the market. And right now we're exporting about 35% of the crop, which is up from 10 years ago, where we were doing maybe 5 to 10% of the crop. So there are opportunities out there to grow demand, and it takes time, but I think the investments are being made. And hopefully over time we'll see demand start to grow, and then we'll be looking at the much better supply-demand picture.
Jim Reed?
Yeah, as the world becomes familiar with cranberries, we see these opportunities exist that 9 years ago, China consumed less than 0.1% of the world's cranberries, and now China consumes over 9% of all the world's production. And that's from, again, basically next to nothing 9 years ago. We see those opportunities in other places as well, that once people become familiar, they love the fruit. They see that as an indulgent opportunity to eat a healthier snack.
And we're going to get into the health benefits a little bit. There's some exciting research happening that could be a real boon to Wisconsin cranberry growers and cranberry growers worldwide. Let's go to the phones again. Up in Rice Lake, we got Tim on the line. Tim, thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. It's funny, you guys were talking about China. My call and my question, within the last couple of weeks, I've been talking with people about, by the way, I export to China.
Okay.
And I've been talking to people in China about maybe creating larger markets for Wisconsin products like cranberries, specifically cranberries and cranberry products. So I was wondering if who I should be able to talk to about such business ventures.
Jim Reed's got his finger up and he's ready to go.
Tim, there are many ways, but one thing you might want to do is the WEDC, the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, is running a trade venture to China in March. And I think the deadline for signing up for that is in a week or two.
Mm.
You may want to get hold of the WEDC. Yes, absolutely. And it's they run the – I've been on trade missions with several other different states in my former life, and I just went on one with the state to India, and I've never seen a better-run trade mission than what the WEDC ran for us. They got us great contacts. They got us in to see many people, made sure that we didn't have translation problems, and they did a fabulous job. If they do half that type of a job in China, then you'll have tremendous opportunities. They're a good resource, and they fund a big piece of the bill. You pay, obviously, to go, but they pay for an awful lot of the things that you'll do along the way. So I would contact the WEDC.
There you go.
WEDC.
WEDC.
You know, also, I have in my company, we've got an incredible translator. We were doing medical work, actually, at one point, too. Hmm. And I have an excellent translator. It's amazing the differences in language and understanding and stuff. That's probably one of the biggest problems we have in business. So sure. I think we've got a little bit of an in on that one.
Tim, thanks so much for the call. Yeah, especially the differences between Mandarin and English. They are amazingly different. Tom Lochner, anything else you wanted to add to that? I was kind of wondering where the majority of our export cranberries go. Is it to Asian countries now?
Well, I think there's a lot of growth in the Asian countries. Probably the largest markets are the United Kingdom,
yes,
and what we call Pan-Europe, which is, you know, mostly the member countries of the EU and in Europe is probably where most of it goes, but I think a lot of the growth that we're seeing is in Asia and the Pacific Rim,
mm-hmm.
And those are where the opportunities are. But Europe has historically been where the initial growth was, it's interesting talking about language. One of the things we've gone into Germany and other countries and or countries where they don't even have a word for cranberry in their vocabulary.
Yes.
So that's the challenge we face. Not only do we have to, because cranberries are native to North America, they're not grown anywhere else. So people don't know what a cranberry is. And so the first thing we have to do is educate them on what a cranberry is, and then talk about the taste of the unique products that they can use. So it's not like going in and trying to sell apple juice to people, because people know what apple juice is, but cranberries are significantly different. And even at times we have to come up with a word to help them understand what a cranberry is.
That's fantastic to think that that a cranberry to folks in other parts of the world would be an exotic delicacy. Jim Reed?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, when I was in India, I sat in front of 26 different potential customers, and 20 of those people had never tasted a cranberry. And I'm talking about R&D and CEO type people. So Tom's right. Mm-hmm. We've got to find a way to get the fruit in front of people. Every single one of them was delighted by the fruit. They love the aroma, love the color, love the flavor. So it's something that has a reason to be. We just have to educate the rest of the world.
Before we move on, I want to ask Tom Lochner. You and I spoke. Anytime I've got a cranberry question, I basically give you a call. And with regard to this glut, oversupply, you know, not matching the increase in demand, our farmers. I remember at one point farmers were dangerously close to the break-even point. Are they breaking even? Are they not breaking even? Just in a nutshell, I know it's very different depending on who you talk to and what outfit they're with, whether it's Crayon Grow, Ocean Spray, or just selling on their own. So in a nutshell, can you give us any insight into that?
Well, I would say right now that as you said, it's diverse. The people getting the commodity price for fruit, and the commodity price for fruit right now is below the cost of production. So people that are in that situation are having a hard time making it go, and they need to see prices turn around and get back to at least a break even or a profitable level. Other folks who are in cooperatives where you try to vertically integrate and capture more of the supply chain and the returns in the market, they're probably doing a little bit better and getting the returns that they need. So it's a little bit of a mixed bag, but I would say right now the commodity price for cranberries is below the cost of production, and we're seeing some growers that are economically stressed as a result of that.
For the Crayon Grow cooperative, I mean, building your own facility, that is the essence of what vertical integration is all about. Was that meant as a means to make it more profitable, I would assume, for growers?
That's exactly what happened. The growers themselves looked to see how could they maximize their money. So they decided to put their hard-earned money into a new processing facility. So we've got on site a processing facility, a freezer that's owned by one of our grower members, and a receiving station. So we have the ability to be a low-cost producer, which ensures that the maximum amount of money goes back to the growers. Mm-hmm. You're right. This was a great defensive measure, and to be honest, an incredibly courageous measure on the part of all the growers in Crayon Grow.
In a market that's sluggish, investing that kind of money is a scary idea.
Exactly right, especially where they had several years in a row where they were getting less than their variable cost to produce. So they were looking at a situation that if that continued, they might jeopardize their family's future. So they courageously put together and built this plant, and it's a wonderful thing for them and for this industry.
1-800-228-5615 is the number to call if you've got a question for Jim Reed or Tom Lochner, two cranberry experts here in western and west central Wisconsin. I've got a question about trade with Pacific nations. It was just announced, and I always make everything about politics, but President Trump, it was announced that he was pulling out of the Trans-Pacific Partnership trade agreement, and the thing wasn't finalized on our end, I understand, but already people have been pointing fingers, this is going to do this. Some people think it's going to be good. Some think it'll be bad. What are cranberry growers or people in the cranberry industry here in Wisconsin thinking? Jim Reed?
Well, I don't believe China was part of the Trans-Pacific.
Yeah, I didn't think so either. A lot of other countries that maybe could have benefited from free trade back and forth with Wisconsin growers.
Possibly, but we're waiting to see. We really don't know which way it's going to go. The administration obviously is making some changes, but we don't know whether they'll be positive or negative to the cranberry industry. So we're going to wait and see.
Okay. Tom Lochner, anything to add?
Yeah, I think that sums it up. My understanding, you know, is from what we understood of the TPP is that it would have reduced significantly lowered or eliminated tariffs on cranberries and cranberry products going into the participating countries, which I think would have been a benefit for Wisconsin growers and U.S. growers. But the other details of the agreement, I think, had some issues. It didn't include China, but I think it was an effort to actually isolate China from the market to give the U.S. a better, somewhat of an advantage going into the other Pacific Rim countries to give us an advantage over China. But as folks have outlined, you know, with an agreement that complex and a multilateral agreement that complex, I'm sure everybody can find something wrong with it, and probably everybody can find something right with it.
Absolutely. Well, with that, let's take our final break. I was just told that the station ID cut in again. We apologize for that. We're going to make sure it's taken care of before the next week's West Side. We're talking about cranberries this hour. I'm joined by Tom Lochner of the Wisconsin Cranberry Growers Association and Jim Reed of Cran Grow Cooperative. 1-800-228-5615.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio is provided by the Lee Ester News Fellowship, providing early career journalists the opportunity to learn hands-on reporting, editing, and broadcasting in a professional setting as part of the WPR News Department.
The Ellie Phillips Public Library, along with UW-Eau Claire's McIntyre Library, are hosting a reading program, One Book, One Community. Interaction will revolve around the book Evicted, Poverty and Profit in the American City. Information online at ecpubliclibrary.info/events.
I'm Rich Kramer. You're listening to Wisconsin Public Radio. The program this hour, The West Side, we're wrapping up our discussion about cranberry, the cranberry industry in western and west central Wisconsin. If you have missed part of the program or would like to listen again, check out the online archives at WPR.org. Just click on the Shows tab. You find the West Side link, and there you can look at or listen to years of programs from with a wide variety of topics. Today we're talking cranberries. 2016 was a good year. We nearly reached the record set in 2013 for production. We're talking close to 600 million pounds of cranberries from 20,000 plus acres of bogs here in Wisconsin, a lot of it in western and west central Wisconsin. Truly amazing. 800-228-5615 is the number to call. We've got another caller. This one is Wallace in Weyerhaeuser. Wallace, thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
Okay. One of the stories I have is perhaps a little mundane, but to your gentlemen who represent the cranberry interest, I wonder if they remember the Junjack name family.
Junjack?
Yes.
Does it ring a bell with me?
Well, Tom Lochner, I have him muted. Does that ring a bell with you, Tom Lochner?
Yes.
The Junjack family?
Junjack?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes, okay. They started right here in our neighborhood, and I still get the goose pimples when I look how they started this bog over on Bass Lake, pulling everything by hand, and then when in the fall they'd advertise for people to rake of cranberries by hand, which was a man-killing job. It was really something else. And just one of the brothers left, and he went up to the Hayward area. Mm-hmm. So later on here, a couple of years ago, they have the Cranberry Festival. We'd go up there to watch, and I am just amazed at what has happened to the cranberry interest, because I do remember in the early 20s when I was a child, and the parents would send us over. We live on it. Wouldn't you know, Cranberry Lake Road. And we'd go across this lake on an old raft, not a boat. We'd push this raft across to go to the bog and pick wild cranberries.
Oh.
So now when I go up to Hayward and I watch the cranberry festivals, it's hard to believe what has happened. So, sort of a mundane story.
No, not mundane at all. That was great. I love it. Thanks so much, Wallace.
You bet.
800-228-5615 if you've got a question or comment. Raking cranberries by hand. I could only imagine what kind of backbreaking work that would be. Tom or Jim?
Absolutely. I've actually got a cranberry rake in my office to remind me of how difficult it used to be. And if you go to some of the older marshes, you can actually see the housing for the people that used to do this, because they used to bring people in from out of state to help with harvest every year, and it was truly backbreaking work.
Yeah, I imagine you'd be hunched over. I didn't know if I interrupted you, Tom Lochner. I wanted to mention...
I'm still there.
Okay.
I'm hearing a ringing or something.
Oh, I think that's because our caller left us, and I left him on. Sorry about that.
No, it's interesting talking about the hand raking, because when I first started with the Growers Association, one of my board members took me out, and I was learning about cranberry harvesting, and they gave me a lesson in hand raking, and after doing it for about 20 or 30 minutes, I decided I understood fully why they invented the harvest equipment they have today. So, as they say, necessity is the mother of invention. And if you've ever been out raking cranberries, you can understand why somebody looked for a better way or a machine to do it.
Yeah, yeah. And so, and for those who don't know, now it's a machine. To some, it might look like it's floating on the water, but it's a machine that they flood the bogs, and it's kind of paddles that kind of beat the berries off of the bush or off the vine.
That's right. The agitation beats the berries off, and the berries are hollow, basically. They've got four chambers inside, and they float. Mm-hmm. So, and by the way, Tom, I don't know that I would have made 20 or 30 minutes, so congratulations on that.
I was much younger then, believe me.
800-228-5615 if you've got a last-minute question or comment about cranberry growing in Wisconsin. If you've got a story to share, we'd love to hear it as well. A couple of great calls, or a number of great calls today. I wanted to talk about the USDA getting involved. It was announced last year the U.S. Department of Agriculture would purchase $27.5 million worth of cranberry concentrate juice. And that was to help alleviate, I think it was the growers or growing associations would have to ask the USDA to do that. But Tom Lochner, $27.5 million these days doesn't sound like a lot. What kind of impact does that have to help stabilize prices or get rid of some of the oversupply?
Well, it helps. And as we were talking a little bit about before, it's about developing demand. And one of the things that we've talked about is there is no real silver bullet, but it's kind of an all-of-the-above category that you grow the international markets, you look for new products, you look for new domestic markets. USDA operates what's called the Section 32 program, and that program is not funded by tax dollars, but actually funded by import fees and tariffs, and that money is used to purchase surplus agricultural products and then get those products into feeding programs, into school lunch programs, and so on, so that people can have healthy diets and to get a good, healthy product to them. So it's a win-win for us to have our products included on those buys when USDA makes those purchases, and it helps. I think the estimate on the $27 million would probably account for 200 to 250,000 barrels of fruit, which helps. And, anything we can do to, first of all, get fruit sold and into the consumer's hand is a good thing, but also I think to get it into those particular programs for people to incorporate cranberries, a healthy product into their diet, I think is a bonus as well.
Not only, a healthy diet, but also maybe introducing it to people that might not have had, is that kind of the idea too, that it would introduce cranberries to more people that could then buy them?
Sure. That, if you're in the schools, you're working with the next generation of consumers.
Right. But this is, by far, this is not the first year that the USDA has done this. In 2015, I think it was nearly $99 million in surplus cranberries were purchased. So some people, Jim Reed, from the outside, I've read some commenters' posts, which is always hazardous to one's health, but these people they may not understand the complexity of it all, but they're saying that the politicians, Republicans, Democrats, federal government is getting involved, interfering with the free market, propping up, it's all this subsidy stuff. They seem upset about it. So what would you tell them? Is it government interfering with the free market?
Not on the level that they do. You know, the Section 32 programs benefit many industries. The government buys far, far more milk or beans or corn than they do cranberries. They really do. And they use those in exactly the right way, putting them into systems where people need better nutrition. And for something like cranberries, the little bit that they've invested does have that opportunity to introduce people that otherwise would never have tasted the product to get to see the product and to enjoy the product and potentially some of the health values. And the money isn't coming, as Tom had mentioned, from the U.S. taxpayer. It's coming from export fees and import duties. So it's almost self-funding, and I think it's a good use of the dollars that the country collects.
All right, and let's talk about research. And Tom, for anyone in the industry, any grower, this was not news. But to me, it seemed like pretty exciting news. Just towards the end of last year, at the beginning of January, I found out about this cranberry research center or research station that is underway. And this is a combination. It's a sounds like a public-private venture, but can you kind of give us a rundown of what that would be and what would it look like?
Well, it's a good question, and it is exciting for the industry, for those of us that are involved and have been working on the project for a number of years. We have a foundation that's affiliated with the Growers Association that has conducted a number of educational programs, but whose primary purpose is to generate the resources necessary to establish and operate a research station for cranberries here in Wisconsin. We currently don't have a research farm like many of the other crops do. All of the research that's done by our university partners is done on cooperating grower marshes, and that's been an excellent program in that it's developed a relationship between our growers and between our research team at the University of Wisconsin. And they've become close partners, but there's a lot of research that doesn't get done because it's just a researcher can't ask a grower to go in and you know, cause significant crop damage or engage in research that, you know, may eliminate a crop on a bed. So we've talked a long time about the need for a research station. Our foundation board made a commitment to raise $750,000, and we're about 80% of the way to that goal. We worked with Senator Baldwin's office and with Representative Duffy's office to get an increase to USDA's Agricultural Research Services research budget, and that increase in funds will initially be used to help support the research station effort. And then down the road, USDA will be able to bring more people into its research program at UW-Madison to work solely on cranberries. So we're in the stage now where we've got the resources to purchase. We're actively evaluating and seeking sites for a purchase. And actually, our board is meeting next week to continue that discussion on moving forward. We've got a cooperative agreement with the USDA that gives us about 2 years to get the project underway, to buy a property and get it moving to be created for a station. So it's a real exciting time for us in the industry that have been working on this for a long time, and I think growers are excited too and supportive of the effort.
2 years. One of the reasons that this is so significant is that, you know, Wisconsin being the powerhouse that it is, we don't have one of these research farms. But yet, places like Washington State does, and we whoop them, don't we?
Yeah. Washington State they have a private foundation that owns their station and makes it available to their Washington State University to use. Rutgers has a facility that's supported by both USDA and the growers, as well as the state university system there. And then Massachusetts also has a research station that. That they support, and the British Columbia growers just established a station within the last 5 years. So people are looking at research. You know, farmers are challenged to grow food for a population that's increasing every day across the world, we're doing it on a smaller land base, and we need to find ways to not only grow those crops and grow that food, but to do it in a sustainable manner. And the way we do that is by having good, solid research and science behind our decision-making process. And I think that's that's what a research station brings to Wisconsin growers, and I think it'll be a resource to growers across the country as well.
We will stay tuned on that. Jim Reed, speaking of research and new markets and China in particular, I learned about something that is pretty interesting, that there's some kind of a research study going on with regard to a disease or a bacteria known as H. pylori, and that this causes stomach problems, ulcers, et cetera, for people everywhere. But there's some kind of a study going on in China?
That's correct. There have been many studies, but this is the definitive study as far as we're concerned. The industry is funding research into China to look to see exactly how much and how cranberry combats these urinary tract infections. And it's very promising, and it's incredible that the industry has gotten together to fund this research, because it's an integral part of what we're doing going forward. That when we sell flavor, we sell all the positive characteristics, but we also know that if we had this health benefit to sell as well, it would do nothing but help our sales.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if this turned out to be – I mean, because – the perception is that in China, they really love natural medicine. They love, yep, you know, all that. So if this turned out to be a definitive a link between cranberry consumption and the reduction in this disease, I mean, wouldn't that blow the doors off of the – or couldn't it?
It really could. That there are – again, there are 1.4 billion Chinese. There are 1.3 million Indians. And their incidence of these urinary tract infections with the H. pylori virus are far higher than they are in the U.S. Mm-hmm. So giving them something like this, a holistic type of a solution, would help, I think, our sales and help them as well. So absolutely. If this research comes in as we're hoping it will, it'll certainly help our sales.
Tom Lochner, we've got just a minute left, and I'll leave it with you. What are you looking at for the future in terms of research or anything to boost cranberry consumption worldwide? Anything exciting?
Well, I think, you know, the China study is exciting. I think Jim described that very well. I think, you know, from our perspective, we're entering our research funding cycle, so we're talking with the research faculty both on, you know, the crop side of things, and there's just some phenomenal technologies out there that we learned about last week at a meeting that we're going to pursue that are going to help us as we grow our crop. But then also, you know, on the health side, we're looking at some additional studies that are ongoing, and there's quite a wealth of work that has been done on cranberry health, and whether it's urinary tract or heart health or periodontal health or what have you. There's a lot of work that's being done, and it's providing a lot of exciting results and potential for the industry. You know, cranberries in Wisconsin are $1 billion a year industry. We're small compared to dairy or some of the other crops, but, you know, we create about $1 billion in economic activity every year, 3,200 jobs for Wisconsin residents, and we think we're an important part of especially central and west central Wisconsin's economy. And we hope to continue to be able to grow and contribute more to the state's economy.
Absolutely. Tom Lochner, Jim Reed, thank you both for your discussion. I really appreciate it. Thanks to the great calls and the stories, especially. That was fun to listen to. I'm Rich Kramer. Thanks for listening. A big thanks to Team Westside, including Mort Cypress, Henry Lippold, Allison Secord, and, of course, Dean Collenbeck and Debbie Brown. Have a safe and productive week. We'll chat again next Monday morning.